A content warning for our listeners. General discussions of sexual violence, including impacts of trauma and healing modalities, will be discussed. If you need support or resources, please visit survivors.org. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Survivors.org podcast, helping survivors to thrive after trauma. I'm your host, Angela Rose, the founder of PAVE, Promoting Awareness, Victim Empowerment, and I am so grateful for our sponsor for this episode today is Color Street Nails, and Color Street is a creative beauty brand with limitless possibilities. I could not be more excited for our guest today. We have an advocate, an author, a former NFL player, just an all-around awesome human being. We have Mr. John Vaughn joining us today, and we're going to be talking about healing through writing, through advocacy, and through a number of different ways. So, John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, John, for those folks that might not know about what happened at the University of Michigan, can you just give us a high-level overview of what you have dealt with over the last couple of years? And how you've used activism to help.
Absolutely. I found out in March of 2020 that there was a team doctor who was giving unnecessary medical exams, all under the guise of medical treatment, prostate cancer screening and testicular cancer screening exams, which were not necessary and were for all on-field and off-the-field injuries, which essentially was rape. And that came out in 2020. And I really started speaking out around July of that year. And then about almost 7-8 months ago, seeing that we weren't getting anywhere in the negotiations, we weren't getting anywhere with speaking with the border regents or the president, I just began a protest, sleeping in a pup tent. Out in front of the president's house at the university, which morphed into what we call today the Hail to the Victims movement.
And how has that impacted you? I know from knowing you over the last couple of months, hearing how many survivors that you have impacted by your activism, by you shattering the silence. Was that healing for you to have so many survivors stop by your tent and to disclose to you?
There was a duality in it. It was very healing and cathartic and empowering to meet so many survivors of Dr. Robert Anderson, who was the doctor at the university. But, you know, I probably heard upwards of 600 individual stories of their abuse or rape from students, male and female, in those 100 plus days that I was out there. But also there was the side of the institution's Goliath personality. And I was getting death threats. You know, even our security team was even hearing details as granular as they're looking to poison you. So it was a very empowering time, but it was also a time in which I knew my life was at risk. And then I had some health issues come up. I had essentially a sweet potato growing in my thyroid. So I had to get my thyroid removed. And then I had a hypertensive episode, which I had never had high blood pressure, to where on the day of surgery, my blood pressure was like 250 over 150. I was definitely a stroke risk. I almost didn't make it out of the hospital. And so that kind of brought me back to how I was raised and some things that my mother had planted, those seeds some 30 years ago, that sometime in life you're going to be faced with things that are bigger than you. And she had raised me to stand, and so I stood.
That's so powerful. For the listeners that don't know, Dr. Anderson has been accused, I think, 1,000 victims plus. Is that right, John?
Yeah, over 2,100 right now. And back of the envelope, just doing our research. In the book that I'm writing, it could be upwards of 10,000 individuals over the course of a 50 plus year career.
Wow. And one thing that you and I've talked about in the past is people knew about this. And I think having that complicity is that's just been such a, what a re-traumatization, I feel like, for so many of the survivors to find out that there were so many people that potentially could have stopped this. And I think as you were talking about some of the health issues, one thing that we're very passionate about at PAVE is talking about the physical impact of trauma on our health. And one thing that really resonated with me, John, was when you talked about how there was other survivors, because it was under the guise of medical treatment, so many other survivors have avoided doctors because of what happened. And so I just think that's so powerful. Did you want to speak to that at all? Do you feel like that happened for you as well?
Oh, absolutely. I stopped going to the doctors after my playing career in the NFL for the most part. And ironically, who is now one of my best friends, Chuck Christian, who played about 10 years before I did for Bo Schembechler football at Michigan, who put off doctors to the point where he had stage 4 prostate cancer. And I remember it was early November. I thought it was just my lymph nodes. I thought I might be getting a sore throat. And I remember having a conversation with him on a Saturday morning about, John, don't be me. Go to the doctor. And I was terrified. Another one of the survivors, Tad DeLuca, he actually drove me to the doctor to get checked out. Literally, I was having panic attacks once we got the appointment set up because I hadn't been to the doctor. And, you know, subconsciously, I never even thought about my own health. You know, I would always try to figure things out myself, but I just realized I was staying away from doctors. And, you know, we found what my endocrinologist, oncologist thought was cancer. They had never seen a tumor this large that wasn't cancer. So we didn't do any biopsies. We set surgery schedule. And I think that trauma, as well as the trauma physically and mentally and emotionally, in the protest, just all led up to what he called it was a massive tumor the size of a sweet potato, you know, just living inside my neck on one side of it. And then I had a golf ball on the other side of my thyroid. And as you talked about, I started reading a book a couple years ago when I learned about this, is The Body Keeps the Score. And because I was having panic attacks, trying to separate my public and professional life and keep my kids out of, because I had listened to so many victims of other atrocities that, you know, their families were threatened and things like that. So I was carrying the weight of really the world on my shoulder, but I was denying myself just my health and, you know, listening to my body. And, you know, I think it came to a point where I literally almost didn't make it out of the hospital. I mean, at any minute I could have been a stroke victim. Blood pressure test every hour. It was scary, but going into this protest, if I can, and I used to visit my mother in the off seasons while I was in NFL. And in February of 1992, she was a teacher and she'd be home by 3:50. By 4 o'clock, we would watch Oprah. That's what we did during the week when I would come home to visit her. And this show, there was something so moving to her. It's the first time she really talked to me about the civil rights movement and her marching. And she talked about, you know, it wasn't just black people, it was blacks and whites and Asians and Indians, Indian Americans and male and female, young and old. It was a human rights issue. And she told me about seeing the skin taken off of people's back by the hoses and the dogs attacking people. And she had marched in 2 major marches. And she said, but we knew we stood because it was bigger than us. We realized that the world that was left to us was not as safe as the world we wanted to leave others. At that point, I'm a month away from being 22, 21-year-old, ready to go out, hang out with my buddies. She says to me, one day you're going to be faced with something that's bigger than you. And I know you'll stand because that's the way I raised you. And so me being a girl dad, seeing how the narrative was being controlled by Michigan, and I didn't want my daughters to find out that I was a rape victim on ESPN. So I wanted to have that conversation with them. And then from the second day that I was on campus, where a young female student told me, I spend more time on this campus thinking about the next time I'm going to be raped or sexually assaulted than I do thinking about my major. I realized this is that moment. This is so much bigger than me. We couldn't change anything that happened to us, but I've always thought that I have to leave the world a safer place than what was left to me. By the time I was 21 years of age, I had been raped over 100 times, but 50 of those times were at the hands of Dr. Robert Anderson, who was the team doctor who We were forbidden to see any other doctors until we saw him. So I never saw my childhood pediatrician once I stepped on campus at the University of Michigan. I just wanted to hopefully be a part of change. And the thing about being an athlete in sports is you're always watching film, you're always trying to correct your mistakes. And this atrocity that became this syndicate of abuse at, you know, these universities had gone on for half a century. I'm 52 years old today, so, you know, literally I found out 2 weeks after my 50th birthday. So it's been going on longer than I've been alive. And not only just the abuse, but the cover up within, that abuse spread to this rape culture that was on campus that was, you know, I talked to a therapist, and she'd been a therapist professionally for 40-some years. And she said, in my 40 years, I've never heard that many individual intimate stories about sexual abuse or rape than you have in less than 100 days. I might have heard 5 or 10 in my entire career in the details that you have heard. So that could have only been a much larger issue than John Vaughn.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that your mom is looking down just so proud of you paving the way for other survivors to speak out. And a couple things I want to touch on. You mentioned about college campuses. I think so many parents are now sending their kids off to school. You know, here we are back to school time. And what a lot of parents don't realize is that the red zone is right now. It's the most dangerous time for students. And so, you know, with PAVE, we're very passionate about making sure that we educate not just young women, but all gender identity. Encouraging men to understand like, what is consent. Right. And so this has to come, you know, from everyone. But I want to turn to how you have found survivor solidarity. You know, I know that you reached out to one of the Nassar victims, survivors, thrivers, Trine, and would love to hear about how that helped you heal by working with other survivors and how that survivor solidarity piece was a part of your healing journey.
Well, it's interesting. We spent a lot of time yesterday together. I'm just kind of talking about things. And we were on the highway and we were like, we shouldn't have met ever. And because I remember watching her impact statement in the Larry Nassar case. And there's two things that I remember very vividly is it was one of the most courageous live events that I'd ever seen in my life. I watched the man stand in front of the tanks in Tiananmen Square. And so I was like, wow, that took an extremely ungodly amount of courage. And then I thought, well, this had never happened at the University of Michigan. This is Michigan State. And so when it came out about Michigan and the difference in their case and our case is our perpetrators and most of the enablers had passed. So I really looked to Trine to figure out how to gain my voice to speak past the grave, but then also to speak in real time to the institution that enabled, empowered, and covered up this atrocity. And, you know, a side note, from a spiritual standpoint, I've always felt like God never calls the equipped. He equips the call. And as I was called to do this, he equipped me with a lifelong friend, almost my counterpart as a female survivor in Trine. And it's been one of the biggest blessings in this. I wouldn't have survived because in the middle of the fire, she was the only one that could understand the public looking at you as a rape victim first and not a human being. And the darkness that that brings and the trauma that brings, but yet you must stand strong. You must stand loud. You must stand in solidarity in those times of darkness, because what I tell people is going from the dark to the light is not like just getting off an exit and you say, okay, I'm there. You know, I think Winston Churchill once said, if you make it through a minefield, don't ever go back through it. Keep going forward. But to get out of the darkness, you have to go back through that minefield. You have to go back through the trauma to find the light. And this is on a whole kind of metaphysical level and all that, but there is no light in darkness. So you have to find your way back through your trauma. And that's where I say victim to survivor is like caterpillar to butterfly. You go through a metamorphosis. And I think we should embrace our victimhood so that you can understand the metamorphosis to become a survivor. Like, it is a process. And I don't think I'm all the way there, because there are days that I just want to crawl up in a ball from playing professional football and being a dad and all these things and an entrepreneur and all that stuff. But there are days where I just want to lay in a ball and cry because I feel the pain of the betrayal, the pain of understanding the different levels of trauma and rape and culture and the taboo nature of most African-American communities of color, how we don't talk about it, men don't talk about it. But the one thing that Trinae and I anchored on yesterday was there's 8 billion people in the world, and a quarter of those people at least have suffered some sort of sexual trauma. So we are not alone. And that's the biggest thing that I think that solidarity has brought me, is to know that I'm not alone in this.
And I love that you talked about the light. And I'd love to talk about your book and how that has helped you find the light and stay in the light. And I know it's not easy to go back into those places, but would love to hear some tips from you for other survivors that might be looking to pen their own journey, or maybe tips when it does feel dark. How do you find the light? What has helped you? So in the short time that we have together, John, can you give us some advice for other survivors and how that book has helped you heal?
Yeah, it really has helped me heal from the standpoint of, in most of these type cases, or just in, like, whether they're in institutions or individual cases, they put this moniker on you of a Jane or a John Doe, which is a faceless, nameless, voiceless individual. So there's no human connection. And in October of 2020, I started to look at my notes, and then a good friend of mine, who now has become a really good friend, my co-author, had written a book called Armies of Enablers, which talked about the bystander complicity in all these atrocities from the Catholic Church to Ohio State to Nasser. And I remember making a decision around 2 o'clock in the morning and, you know, excuse my French, but I said, I'm not a fucking John Doe. I'm John Vaughn. I had to gain back my individuality as a man, as a dad, as a son, as a brother, as a teammate, and say, I'm going to control my narrative. And that will be the light. At that point, that's all I knew. And also writing this book, you're battling a Goliath that uses the tool of revisionist history to try to act like this atrocity never happened. And that has become a synonymous problem in these atrocities, that these institutions that are culpable, because when you think about it, it's one man that raped several thousand individuals that could only happen if he was empowered by an institution, which the University of Michigan had paid almost $11.9 million to prove that 24 plus individuals at the university in leadership, and one being Bo Schembechler and Don Cannon, who was the athletic director, knew about this doctor. They're trying to erase the legacy of all of these victims and survivors to uphold this godlike aura of a statue of a man who was a coach but still a human being that obviously was flawed, that the university proved knew about. They're trying to erase our history. But you're never going to have a great coach without great players. And so you can't have one without the other. And I think that's been the most healing, is to really get deep. And I find that most survivors want to tell their story, whether it be publicly or not, but they want to get it out to someone else who understands. So being able to interview and get to know so many survivors in different backgrounds and has also been empowering for me, but I also think it's been empowering for others. Because at the end of the day, I'm only one man, but I've always felt like one man can move a mountain if he's standing next to another man or another woman that's trying to move the same mountain. And so our collective voices, and also what I've learned to do, not just in writing articles or speeches or this book, is I take parts of other people's story and I make reference to them to show that this is a community of survivors that are standing. You know, I might be the messenger, but don't ever forget the message is that we've decided to say no more and to take back ownership of our individuality and our contributions to these different organizations.
That is so beautiful. John, thank you so much for reminding us that we are so much more than our trauma, that the light is always there if we seek it. And there's so much healing in finding others and that survivor solidarity piece. I love that. So John, how can people find you and find out more about your book?
So right now you can find me on HailToTheVictims.com, in which we also have a 15-minute mini documentary that kind of talks through our 100 days. And very soon I will be launching my nonprofit. Tentatively, I'm thinking of calling it the Solidarity Metaverse Project, working with some more intelligent people than I, but just trying to use technology to create a better world for survivors and how they handle their PTSD, whether that be in sport or just any survivors. And I should be actively joining Trine in the development office of Avalon Healing within the next 30 days. And I will also be creating my own website for the book, as well as the nonprofit and all the other things that not only I'm doing, but so many survivors are doing in this fight.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And having you and Trine come and speak at PAVE's I Am the Movement event was so incredible. Your voices together, individually so powerful, together unstoppable. So thank you for your voice and for all that you have done for our movement and continue to do. And we are so excited to continue to partner with you, John, and see the amazing places that you go. So thank you for your time today. And thank you all of you for tuning in. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Survivors.org podcast. Again, this episode was sponsored by Color Street, a creative beauty brand with limitless possibilities. And until we meet again, remember to please love yourself, respect each other, and together we can change the world. See you next time. Thank you.
Thank you.
For all survivors and their loved ones tuning in, please remember that you are not alone and it's not your fault. If you need support or resources, please visit us at survivors.org.